Hello, and welcome to episode 96 of the Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast, a podcast where we talk about games and gaming from a feminist perspective. And my name is Samantha Blackman, and I'm an associate professor here at Purdue University in wonderful West Lafayette, Indiana, where I talk about, read about, write about, dream about, amongst other things, video games, video games, video games.
And I have a cameo from my son.
I apologize in advance because I thought my voice was back and I feel like I'm losing it again. So, this is episode 96, where we are joined by science fiction author and BioWare Canada community manager Dave. I should have asked you this beforehand. Hulgard?
It's Hulgard.
Hulgard.
I never knew that.
I apologize. I recognized as soon as I started to say your name that I did not ask about correct pronunciation.
I didn't get it right until I was at least five, so.
So I don't
I feel you on that as a Carabinist.
Yes. we'll start with an intro of Dave in just a moment, but so we'll, before that, we'll run through these unimportant people who are here all the time. And we'll start with you, Carabinus, since you have announced yourself.
Yeah, that's my name, Alicia Carabinus. It rhymes with penis.
After a great start.
Oh, dead. Otherwise, he's sitting behind me somewhere going, what? I'm a lecturer at Purdue in the English department. I'll be starting a PhD there in the fall, working with Sam as her personal servant.
For 5 years, yes.
And I promise I swear more than the rest of these women.
We'll go in the order that I see people. Ashley?
Hello, I'm Ashley Barry. I work at a publishing house in Boston called Hachette Book Group. And I also write for Not Your Mama's Gamer. And, yeah. I'm cool. I like dogs. So that's cool.
That's a nice segue into Charlotte.
Yeah. I also like dogs, if you can't tell. I'm Charlotte Hyde. I'm a doctoral candidate at Purdue, also in the Rec Comp program. I am the resident Lego scholar. I've had a hard week, so I can't wait to get to the Legos tomorrow.
Woo-hoo.
And I plan to lose myself in them for hours.
Yay. And Wendy.
I am Wendy Sierra. I am an assistant professor of English and Digital Cultures and Technologies at St. John Fisher College in Rochester, New York. And I am enjoying my beautiful spring break with giant scare quotes around spring because I think the high today was like 15 feels like -1. Yeah.
Feels like spring.
It's not much better here.
Yeah, we're supposed to drop down to like -10, -15 tonight, actual temp. So
I am so I don't know who in the group is going to Tampa in 2 weeks.
I am. I can't wait.
It's supposed to be in the 80s. I think I might die. I don't even remember what 80 feels like. I don't.
I know. And the email today said bring your sunscreen. I was like sunscreen.
Your what? For what?
Sunscreen.
My friend and I just started rewatching Game of Thrones. I don't know if anybody watches that. And we got to the part where the
Does anybody
like,
watch Game of Thrones?
We got to the part where the nurse is like, sweet summer child, what do you know of winter when the nights are long and people freeze and live and die and never see the sun? And I was like, I know, right? Exactly. So high.
Thanks.
Hello. And
I did kill my video. I'm sorry, because I'm down to like 2 bars on my connection, and everybody was starting to look real freakish.
Okay.
Well, so if it comes back, I'll pull it back.
So, and Dave, Hulagard.
Well, it's nice to meet everybody. My name is Dave Hulagard. I am the community manager for BioWare on the Dragon Age and Mass Effect franchises. That's kind of my day job. By night, I write science fiction and paranormal and pretty much anything that just strikes my fancy at any given moment.
Woo, writers!
And that's about as exciting as life gets. Like, I get to be on podcasts every so often, so this is cool. Thanks for letting me in.
Yay. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
We're a wild bunch, so watch out for us. So we do this. We do our kind of our normal thing is to start off with what you're playing, what you're reading, what you're drinking, which are 3 very important things. And then we'll have a couple quick news items, and we'll jump into all the questions we want to bombard you with, and have a hopefully civil conversation. Kidding. And since you are our guest, we will start with you this evening. Dave, what you playing?
Right now, believe it or not, I'm playing Dragon Age Inquisition. I know, right? Big surprise.
Well,
huh?
That's a surprise.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like part enjoyment and part work, but all awesome. So it's just fun to play around. Like, multiplayer is good stuff, and I get beat horribly because everybody's way better than me. So it's one of the secrets of the industry. But we're all pretty awful.
Cool. All right. So we will jump in. I'll tell you what I'm playing. Well, because I'm always playing a little bit of everything because I have to play. I have a 6-year-old, so I have to play different things during the day than I do at night. So in my 6-year-old wake time, I've been playing Rayman Legends.
Yeah.
Xbox One. Well, because it was, you know, even though I teased Charlotte terribly when she was playing it nonstop when it first came out, when it came out for the Xbox One, and then it was free this month, I was like, well, I'll play a little bit of this. So this week I've been playing a lot of Rayman Legends and being told what to do by a very bossy 6-year-old. I've also been playing some Destiny with Alicia, believe it or not.
Yeah.
She got to join in the party and play some Destiny with Ricky and I, who is not here tonight, who usually is here. Boo. Okay. So, and then on handhelds, I've been playing Majora's Mask, of course. Anyway, I think anybody with 3DS right now is playing Majora's Mask. And then I broke down because I was feeling real nostalgic. Because I've been playing a bunch of, not only, I was playing, feeling nostalgic because I've been playing a bunch of stuff from the 80s in my games narrative course, because we've been talking about games from the 80s and reading Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. So I was feeling kind of real nostalgic, so I bought Qbert Rebooted for the Vita. And I realized that, or I remembered and then realized, I remembered that I was horrible at that game when it first came out, and then realized that I hated it when it came out. And I still hate it. So, hey, nostalgia's a bitch, and then you die after you waste your $7.
Well, that took a dark turn.
So that's what I've been playing. Alicia, what you
Yo.
Playing?
well, you already said I was playing Destiny, so yeah, there's that. I played a little bit of Rayman Legends because, you know, it's the free game on the Oon right now. I'm going to make that happen. It was okay. Shush, you. I remember kind of like Sam that when I was in the middle of it, I don't really like platforming. It's not my jam. Oh, hey, there's a 2-year-old who just came in here who should be with her dad. Hi, 2-year-old. Come here. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Mostly what I've been playing, I replayed Life is Strange, and yay! I replayed Life is Strange, which I really enjoyed.
I pickle.
And I played Resident Evil Revelations 2, which I did not enjoy at all. It was one of the worst experiences I've had lately. Because it was just boring. It was so boring. And then I saw that. Did you guys see this? That the episode, the second episode is out now?
I'm
like, if you're going to release an episode like every week or two, do you understand what the episodic format is for? Like, what are you doing?
The second episode of what is out already?
Resident Evil Revelations 2.
Oh, yes. I gotta go play it.
It's actually coming out, though, next week or the week after.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Nice. Good
Sam.
I'm impressed she said my name. I feel loved again. Wendy, what you playing?
Ah, that's a good question. Let me go back to the dock and remember.
Wait, well, I got to ask you.
Okay. Was that the question?
No, the second one. Why?
I'm working on this project. I didn't see that. And I haven't, I never played the first or second Fallout, and so I kind of wanted to go back and have a point of reference. And it's a game that is older than games that I normally play. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say, though, I have a character that has an intelligence of 3. And so, like, when I'm leaving the starting area, right, and the wise woman is giving me the quest, she's like, go to town, find Bob, shiny bottle, Bob. So they change your response, what responses you can have to people based on what your intelligence is. And since I have the character with such a low intelligence, like
you can kind of grunt at people, is what you're saying.
At one point, I went up to the slavers because I was trying to finish a quest, and they invited me to be a slaver with them, and my chat option was Bobo make ill. Yes, Bobo make ill. And then there was one where I don't know, it had chat options, and I pissed somebody off, and she called her guards, and so my response to her was Bobo go with metal people now. So that's been entertaining, but it also makes it really hard to finish the game because all of the quest givers think that my character is such an idiot that they usually won't give him quests. Which makes a challenge, but that's been pretty fun, yeah. And then I started playing Evil Within with a friend, and because I was like, you're not going to beat me, Evil Within. You're not going to win. I will win this contest. And that's not the case. It's still boring as crap, and I still...
Aw, I was hoping you would say something else.
No, I'm not even sure. We made it halfway through and then put it down, and we're like, all right, well, we want to play something fun, but it obviously can't be that game. So then we picked up Outlast and played through the DLC. Pretty cool. And then played Bioshock again, because who doesn't want a little Bioshock now and again?
Yes. Love Bioshock.
The original Bioshock?
Yep. Well, yeah, because I haven't played Infinite, and I want to play that. Mm-hmm. I got it, like, during one of the Steam sales at Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, let's play the first one, and then, you know, you got to pregame it. So that's my list.
Charlotte, what you playing, hon?
Okay, there might be sound effects. Apparently it's playtime at 9:20 every time. I don't know. She doesn't do this on any other night, but so I've been playing Rayman Legends, which I love. I love it so much that I mean my thumbs literally get bruised because I get so intense. I just love that game. It makes me happy. I don't understand how, like, the music doesn't make you happy. And
I thought it was okay.
The jumping. And the smiling. I love it. And then I've been playing Majora's Mask, of course, on the 3DS. So, mostly this week, I think, was Rayman Legends.
These these background noises are really adding to
the I'm threatened right now because I don't love Rayman. Like, I feel like you're threatening me with your dog.
Well, she's biting me, though, so I don't know.
I know,
like.
But if I don't give in, she might bite me.
She thinks I'm her chew toy, which is not the greatest situation.
So I guess it's not just threats like Rayman or Elf.
Yeah, or Star Wars.
Oh, good, we found the squeaky. All right.
Yeah, so everybody's safe now. Okay.
Okay.
Silence. All right. Where are we? I feel like we're lost.
I know. Charlie, so you play Raven and what else?
Majora's Mask.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
we Majora's Mask. I played that. It's I don't even know where I am. I got past the snowy thing.
We're not doing gamer confessions anymore, but can I just say that I hate Majora's Mask?
No, you can't.
Why do you hate it?
Say whatever you want.
Much. It's like Link's big bitch quest. They took all the things that I hated about Zelda and they just crammed them straight into one game. Go get this. Go get that. I like that hat. Get it yourself.
Says the woman who plays like WoW nonstop.
That's different, Sam. You don't understand.
No, apparently I
don't. You don't know me.
I really like the Majora's Mask. It's really the first Zelda game I've played, though, so I don't really have like a ongoing issue with it. But
all right, so, Ashley, honey, what you playing?
I'm playing Majora's Mask as well.
Speaking of.
Yeah. I'm playing. Oh, I started this little indie game called Flow where you play a very pretty looking amoeba. And
yep.
It's very cool. It's a beautiful puzzle game.
And you don't have to fetch anything.
Samantha's just shaking her head.
Flow, journey, all that shit just went right over my head.
I
bought it and I wanted to throw my whole fucking PS3 out of the window. And I just don't get it.
If there's a little dude in Journey and he was like, hey, go get the stupid bunny hat for me. With that, like,
no. If there was a little dude with a big ass shotgun that went around shooting people, then it would have been better. Thank you very much.
Remember how we were going to behave?
Yes, I know. I'm stopping.
I downloaded Five Nights at Freddy's 3 tonight. I want to do a Power Hour review. Is it good? It looks frightening.
Well,
I'm so excited.
I haven't played the third one, but I love them. So
yeah, I do too.
Awesome. They don't really change the mechanics that much.
No, but I feel like this one, I watched some Let's Play videos of it, and he doesn't put is it a guy that's the main character? I don't even know.
Why do we assume
of course.
I don't know. So anyway, the protagonist always puts up the camera like to his face and then it like blocks out everything else. This time you can actually see like around the camera, which is really terrifying. So now you can see the animatronics like running past you and through the windows and oh my god. I'm so excited to get the shit scared out of me.
I know what I'm getting this weekend.
Anyway, yeah, those are the... Oh yeah, and I beat Neverending Nightmares too, which is a indie game, and the developer has like OCD and some, it was like based off of his mental illnesses and everything, which is kind of interesting. So anyway, that's what I've been playing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I'm going to have to buy, Five Nights at Freddy's and like spend the weekend under the covers with my iPad. See, I liked playing the first one better on iPad because I could play it in the dark.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't even imagine playing it on my iPad. I think I'd throw my iPad.
You play it under the covers in like your own little like kid fort, so when you throw it, it doesn't go anywhere.
I seriously think I would throw the iPad across the room like that. Ah, no. Yeah, that sounds. I saw that it was on tablets, and I was like, oh, hell no.
I think I'm going to try that. I'm going to do that this weekend.
There you go. All right. That wasn't too bad.
What you drinking, Jameson? Done.
Ha! We didn't do reading, heathen.
All right, sorry.
What you're eating? Dave, you read anything good? Tell us about it.
I'm actually reading right now. I'm working on a collaborative project with a friend of mine, Tony Healy, and we both kind of traded manuscripts. So he's going through mine, I'm going through his, and eventually we're going to release them together. But it's a lot of fun. Like he's got such a creative mind because he's really kind of a sci-fi guy, but he can tell stories in pretty much any genre. And so he's been really influenced by old Bruce Springsteen songs, like the 1970s era, The Boss. And he he came up with like I think it's like 5 total stories that have all been influenced by Bruce Springsteen lyrics. And, you know, knowing that premise going into it, I wasn't really sure what to expect because it's so different from what he normally writes. But he's done a really good job with it. I can't wait to wrap it up and excited to get these out the door.
Cool. So what's yours about?
So we both kind of had this idea of talking about how music plays such a huge influence in our writing. And, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you know, when you have like a novel you're working on or just like an idea that's fully fleshed out and you should be working on it, but it's all these like little scenes that keep jumping out that have nothing to do with your novel at all. And we were both just kind of laughing about that, how frustrating it is. You know, when you want ideas for like your big project, they don't come to you. It's always other things that are jumping out. So we thought it'd be really cool to create something where you could actually take these little scenes, because if they're begging to get out, you might as well let them out. So, you know, just take them into like short little chunks. And so his collection of stories are all around the same character in the same town. Mine are all different, just a little bit different style. And I kind of play around in a couple different genres. Like, I love sci-fi, I love paranormal, I love all that stuff, but then once in a rare while, I just want to tell something a little bit more sentimental. So I feel like I'm all across the board in this. Like, it's pretty schizophrenic, but at the same time, like I hope there's like an overall theme that you know that carries them. If I did my work correctly, we'll see.
I think there's a lot of writers who can pull that off really well, so I wouldn't worry about it so much. I mean, just do what you need to do. Like Dan Shaun does that a lot in his books. He'll bring in elements of the paranormal, but it's still grounded in realism. But maybe it's not. But maybe it gets weird. But maybe it comes back. And I think he just kind of follows stories where they need to go. So, you know, just do what you do.
Yeah, so true. So true.
I actually had the chance to, he let me see his manuscript, and it's really cool, and I think it's good. I think it's like a good platter of writing, if I want to put it that way, and compare it to food, I guess, in a weird way. Well, it's interesting, because I don't, like, every story was totally different, and all the genres were just different, and I thought it was really refreshing, because I didn't know what I was going to get into in the next chapter, so good job.
I swear like I didn't pay her to say that.
No. You get it.
Well, hey, that's actually a good segue into mine, too, though. Because my dirty little secret is that I'm actually more into novels than anything else, like anything, gaming, whatever. So I was reading your blog earlier, and I downloaded The Jumper.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so that's what I've been reading right before the podcast. It's pretty cool so far.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, too.
I will be anxious to hear your follow-up thoughts on that.
Yeah, all of the compliments tonight, right?
Uh-huh. Cool. So who else? What's your name? Alicia.
Yo. I'm reading news out of GDC, but on the better side of things, I've been reading poetry this week. I don't know, just in the poetry space.
Cool.
That's it.
Wendy, what
you need to elaborate?
I am not reading anything fun. So I don't have anything to say. The last fun man, again with the scare quotes tonight. I read that book like Wild that was just a movie. And I hated it so much.
I couldn't get through it. I tried twice.
I feel like if a one-sentence summary of the novel starts with the words, one woman's journey, new. I read it for a book club, and I hated it so much. So that's the only fun reading. And then I'm working on a essay on ecofeminism in anime. So I've been reading a lot about those two topics. In regards to Princess Mononoke. So.
Cool. Yep. Am I the only one left?
It's you.
Well, so what I have been reading is, of course, stuff for class.
My husband told me an interesting story about you today. Go ahead.
he's tainted Ready Player One for me.
Yes. Victory!
He has planted doubt in my mind.
Oh no! Don't tell me.
No, not doubt that it's a good book, but because I've read the book like 3 or 4 times. So as we were prepping for class this week, I said I'm gonna treat myself and listen to the audiobook because Will Wheaton reads it. And I got kind of a fan crush on Will Wheaton. So I was listening to it, and, you know, and after a while I was like, yeah, I can see. It's kind of like, there's other things you could have done here that would have made more sense. And I'm like, see, now I sound like Terry. It's like.
Yeah. Y'all just need to chill and read the book. It's a good book.
I've read the book like 3 or 4 times.
Don't overthink.
So I know, and that's exactly what I was thinking. And I had to step back for a minute and just allow myself to revel in the sweet, melodious sounds of Will Wheaton. So I've been listening to Ready Player One again, and also been reading Catherine Hale's How We Became Posthuman.
As you do.
You too? Is that what you said?
Oh, I said as you do, right?
As you do, yeah, because everybody does that for light reading on the weekends. Because I'm working on an article on posthumanism and Gamergate, believe it or not.
Interesting. For where were you?
For a collection, for an edited collection.
Interesting.
So yeah. People put the weirdest shit together. It's like, oh, look, there's some post-human theory over here. Well, we can throw in some shit about some object-oriented ontology. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it in terms of Gamergate. Because,
throw in a little actor network, and you've got the
trick. Exactly, because there's some Latour in there, too. You got me.
Mm-hmm.
You got me.
I'm there.
I've been reading a little Leotard. If y'all want to get into all that stuff. But.
No.
Only if it has anything to do with anything about games, and I just spilled wine all in my lap.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful transition into what you're drinking.
What you're drinking. Dave, I don't know if we gave you a heads up, but we drink heavily while we're not kidding.
It's the only way to fly.
I'm actually pretty disappointed. I didn't think of that. Like, here I am bringing seltzer water and
hey!
No, son.
I love seltzer water.
Yes.
I like seltzer water with some liquor in it.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, well, since I already spilled mine in my lap, and this was only my third glass, I am drinking a mediocre Pinot Grigio.
You should put some sparkling water in it.
No.
I knew you were going to say that. But the only sparkling water I have right now is lemon flavored, so I didn't want to.
Oh, yeah. The flavors are good with wine. I do it all the time.
Yeah, but it has to be a sweeter flavor than lemon to mix it with wine.
Oh, well, I'm using, I have sparkling water and wine right now, and it's berry water and white Zinfandel.
Jesus, now that sounds Christ. Sweet.
It's good.
Might as well just have a lollipop.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm having it's a long day. It's not that sweet, though, because there's not, like, sugar and stuff in there. It's sparkling water.
Well, you said, are you drinking a white Zin?
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
that's
like Kool-Aid anyway.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, the sparkling water doesn't add any sweetness to it.
And, you know, Alicia can't talk because she likes the Sprite of wines, Moscato.
I'll drink anything. I'd be like Moscato.
Well, let's not throw shade on Moscato now.
Let's not. Look, I'm sitting here drinking Jameson, okay?
Mm.
Y'all
straight.
Step up to the plate. No, I've mixed. Give me an hour.
I gotta teach in the morning. I can't be drinking all the hard liquor right now.
Oh, let's see. Did we get everybody for drinking?
Oh, ladies.
Mommy.
Oh, what you drink? Oh, God, I know what you're drinking. What you drinking, honey?
Oh, you can't reach it that way. I'll do this side. My 4 more shots of espresso.
Espresso.
I really think you need to go back to the alcohol because drinking all that espresso late at night is not going to do you any good.
Not good for you, man.
I graded 22 papers in one day.
Like, yes, just I'm going like, to try this.
Asked the paper for your life choices.
And graded them. And I was like, here we go, let's go. They weren't even like late or anything. I had just gotten them a few days before, and I was like, might as well grade these 22 papers. Let's go. What else we got? I wanted to go through meetings. We need to get some stuff done. Maybe write a grant. I don't know. Check out an article. Let's go. What do we got?
You know, I'm going to have to try that tomorrow. I'm so behind in my grading with our kids being out of school all week.
No shit.
I might have 8 shots of espresso all at once in the morning just to see what the hell happens.
Let's do it. Terry's going to take the kids in the afternoon. Let's do it.
I do miss the booze, though.
Oh, wait, I didn't go.
Mm.
I
was too drunk to go.
So I'm drinking water, which is super cool. And I also didn't say what I was reading. I forgot. I was dazing out. So I'm reading my coworker's book called Night Owls right now. It's about a vampire that runs a bookstore on a college campus, and it runs all night. It's awesome. So that's cool. That's what I am drinking and what I am reading.
Yay.
That sounds like fun. I like bookstore books, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? I like books about bookstores.
It's kind of like a weird genre.
It's like urban, I think it's like urban fantasy kind of.
Well, has anybody except Charlotte? I know she's probably read it. In fact, I think you told me about it. Mr. Penumbra's 24-hour bookstore.
That was so good. Sorry.
That book is so good.
It's so good. It like brings all of the things into the book.
It does. Social media, games, the
data.
Secret societies. Yeah.
Libraries.
Bring all the boys to the yard.
It brings all the boys to the yard. Well, or girls, depending on what your drug
is. Whatever.
But does it have one woman's journey?
No, it doesn't.
Damn it.
See?
It is the most. Out. It's probably the most fun book I've ever read. Like, just sheer fun.
Yeah, it's a good book. It's a fun book, too. So, yeah, I like books. I like books about bookstores.
I'm going to read it again.
Just because. All right.
Y'all.
So, Alicia, are you ready, or should we come back to
you? Oh, yeah. I was sitting here playing two dots. I forgot that I'm on news tonight because Alex Lane.
Sarah's on news. She's at GDC. So blame her.
All right. Sarah is at GDC, so I'm going to talk about GDC. There were two really big announcements. I mean, we don't want to spend a lot of time on news because we have Dave, but there were two really big announcements for us this week, I feel, and that was the Crash Override Task Force, Zoe Quinn and company, trying to stop online harassment, something obviously we've written about a lot, considering that, you know, we are a collective of women. And then just today, they announced the relaunch of Boing Boing's Offworld, run by Lee Alexander, who is a stellar human, and I would read her anywhere. And Offworld is going to be a place to feature minority voices in gaming. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see a site dedicated to women and minorities talking about gaming, talking about gaming culture, and see what they do with it with the relaunch, especially with, you know, having Lee giving Lee such a big platform, Lee and Laura Hudson, with Boing Boing behind it. So that's the news.
Yep.
Yay.
That was a blimp. Thanks a lot.
I did my best.
So, and then we'll jump into the fun stuff, what we're all here for, right? And that's to talk to Dave tonight about some interesting things, not only his work at BioWare, because that's interesting enough, but also about his own writing and his own publishing, because that is even more interesting, because on top of everything else, we are kind of a bunch of bibliophiles, believe it or not, you know.
Some of us even have graduate degrees in
I was going to say, and some writing. Of us even have, like, MFAs and fancy shit like that.
we love this shit.
We have degrees in wording good.
We word good.
We word very good.
We don't always talk so good by this time of night, but you know.
Especially if we're drinking Jameson.
Or espresso.
Or espresso. Thank you, Whitney. I feel supported.
Excuse me, my turn to have a coffee fit. Dave, if you don't mind, we'll just jump in and ask you some questions. And sure. I'll start with my questions. I only have one or two, and they're pretty simple. And then we'll once we really get into it, we'll start throwing things at you virtually and see how that works out. So my first question is how long have I'm going to start with BioWare stuff, oddly enough. How long have you been a community manager at BioWare? Is the first question, and since that's pretty easy. the second part of that question is, one of the things that we found interesting when we've talked to other folks that work in industry in different ways is to talk to them about the path that they took to get where they are so far, right? So, you know, some people have done stuff like write for Comedy Network and then end up at Nintendo, and then some people have done, you know, other fun stuff that didn't seem really connected. So tell us how long you've been working at BioWare and how'd you get there?
Sure. Yeah, I think that is so true because, you know, you talk to people about their individual paths to get to, you know, where we are, and I don't think anybody has the exact same path. And most of the time, it's never all what you would suspect. So for me, I started at BioWare about 3 years ago. I came in right at the end of, I guess it was launched for Mass Effect 3, right into Extended Cut. So that's where I joined the party. So you can imagine that was a blast right off the bat.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
for getting there, you know, my path is, you know, maybe it's a little more what you might expect. I actually got started working in games retail right out of high school. You know, I thought I would just get, you know, a little summer job to earn some money and hopefully get to college. And then next thing I know, I'm suddenly a career games guy working for a retailer. I started off kind of doing, like, you know, in-store stuff, and then eventually worked my way up into purchasing and marketing. And that was really where I kind of found my passion. I didn't even realize these were things that I would be any good at, but it was a lot of fun. It really kind of just tapped into that creative outlet that I was looking for. And by doing that, yeah, I really built a huge network of people, because I got to work with so many different companies and meet so many different people within those companies that I sort of established, like, a good reputation in the games industry, and I really just did everything I could to try to make my name synonymous with quality, so that way people would remember me, you know, kind of years down the road. I could say, hey, remember that thing we did for Fallout 3? Well, hey, now I'm looking for a job, you know, that sort of thing. And honestly, that's really what happened, was that I had been trying to get on with BioWare for a long time, about 8 years, actually, and it had just so happened that BioWare was looking for a replacement in their social media team, and I knew someone that knew someone that got me an interview, and the rest kind of went from there.
Nice.
Sounds good. I think that's, if I can follow up, I think it's really interesting that your story is so similar to what I hear about so many positions in the gaming industry. There's not just one path, right?
Yeah.
We have a variety of ways of getting here. And I was thinking, in fact, I was writing about this yesterday, and I think part of that is because the industry, since it's been an industry, has been in constant flux. Like,
yeah.
Everything is always changing so much that there's no one way to train people, because tomorrow it's all going to be different again.
Well, you know, what's kind of funny is that the video game industry, you know, like, the way we know it today is so different than it was even as much as, you know, kind of 15, 20 years ago, where, you know, to me, like, I always thought video games were cool, and so it's hard for me to imagine a time where that wasn't kind of the norm, that video games weren't, like, the huge business they are today. And, you know, back in those days when video games started to grow and companies had, you know, really like no idea of how to get started and what they needed. And, you know, they were just kind of grabbing anyone and everyone that they thought might have skill sets needed to be successful in the games industry. And I think that if you talk to people that have been around, you know, some of the old timers and whatnot, you know, they'll have even crazier paths, you know, of how they got to where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Great. So I'll ask my second question, and I'll let some of the other folks jump in and ask their questions too. I'm kind of jumping because I'm going to jump from BioWare to your own writing. But so when you think about how you create narrative in your own work, and how you do, well, one of the things I've been talking about with a bunch of undergraduate and graduate students who do things like creative writing and rhetoric and composition, and even a lot of our CGT and CS students is not only narrative design but world building. So when you think about how you do this thing in your own work, how does it affect how you think about and experience narratives in the games that you play?
Well, it's true, because it really does change your experience. You know, in my case, I'm always dissecting and analyzing the narrative in kind of any form of entertainment I consume, whether it's, you know, other books, games, movies, you name it. As it relates to games, you know, I mean, for me personally, the bottom line is that I just really want a good story. You know, something that I care about, something that I'm going to invest in emotionally. And if a game can accomplish that, being perfectly honest, I really don't care if the game is 60 hours or 6 hours, right? Like, I just want the experience to be worth it. And I've played phenomenal games, you know, on both ends of the spectrum. And it's tough because, like, when you do your own writing, you're so close to the narrative that you don't really see cracks in the foundation. And that's why, like, you know, like Ashley was talking earlier about reading my manuscript, it's why I used beta readers so extensively before publishing, because I don't want there to be cracks in the foundation that I just can't see. And a beta reader is like an instant BS detector, right? Like, they will tell you, like, as straight as it gets, you know, whether or not you need to work on something or whatnot. They don't really pull punches, which I love. Mm-hmm. Because I really want to understand how people perceive my universe, so that in turn it kind of makes me rethink how I perceive the ones I play in.
Cool. So you said something that made me have made a second question pop up in my head. You were talking about the games that you play. So other than Dragon Age Inquisition, which you're playing right now, what's your favorite genre of games, and what's your favorite game?
For me, RPG is far and away my favorite genre of game. And mm-hmm. And it's funny because, you know, when I grew up on RPGs, like, my first, like, the one that really kind of just knocked me on my butt was the original Phantasy Star on Sega Master System. And mm-hmm. it's just, like, I kind of miss that turn-based style RPG. Like, I know it's so archaic by today's standards, but there was something so charming about those games that I really miss. And, you know, that's really what got me into RPGs and really thinking about story in general. And then I kind of took a break. You know, I played through, you know, like, the Zeldas and things like that, of course. But then came along a little company called Squaresoft. And in particular, I remember my brother had purchased Chrono Trigger, and I was interested in it because it had like these huge reviews. I mean, crazy scores back in those days. And you know, he beat the damn thing in like a week or two, and just said like, "I'll tell you what, I'll let you borrow it." And I was like, "Nah, it's cool, man. I probably won't play it." And he's like, "No, no, no. I'm just gonna leave it here, and you play it at your leisure." And so, next thing I know, I'm missing meals, definitely missing showers. You know, I might have like just barely made it through class a couple times, but I mean, it was one of those games that just totally reignited my love of RPGs, and that was it. Like once I had played through Chrono Trigger, and I mean, we're talking like all 13 endings, like within, you know, a month or two, just like I did not do anything else. That was it. I'm just like, RPGs are my thing, and it's always been kind of the driving force behind what I want to play. It's something with a really strong narrative, and if the gameplay is equally as compelling, like, I'm sold.
Yeah. No, the funny thing is I'm with you on that. RPGs are definitely my favorite genre. Well, one of my favorite games of all times has got to be Grim Fandango, and I pulled Charlotte into the madness with the reboot. I have to admit, and I'm not saying this because you're here, but one of my favorite game series of all times was Mass Effect. Mm. He's like,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's one of those things, you know, where it's like, oh, you know, I know I work for the company, but I still really love Mass Effect.
Yeah. Well, is that makes a really good segue to one of the things I wanted to ask, if I may.
Yeah.
Same, is that okay with you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Boss lady. We've seen a lot in the past couple of years of companies talking about the risk of new IPs, right? There's so much money that goes into it trying to create, like, especially a AAA title, a new IP, so much money that gets poured into it if it doesn't succeed. You know, I mean, it can kill a company. But we saw such huge success with Mass Effect, people having such an emotional connection with it. And considering the conversation we're having right now, what kinds of factors do you think really went into that? What helped cause that success?
Oh, man. That's a big question.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, people will sometimes ask me if it's possible to work for BioWare and also be a fan of our games. And, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, my first introduction to BioWare was actually Knights of the Old Republic.
And, oh, yeah.
Man, did I fall in love with that game.
That's a really good game.
I mean, like, to this day, right? Like, you can pick that up and play for hours without even realizing time has passed. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, though, that as much as I loved that game, it was really Mass Effect that completely changed the way that I felt about video games as a whole. I mean, it was suddenly like everything else that came before it no longer mattered because a new standard had been set. So, again, I'm speaking for myself, not as the company here, but you know, Mass Effect was really the first game to come along and really make me feel like it was my game. You know, like, Garrus and Tali weren't just characters, they were my team. And I felt the weight of the galaxy on my shoulders because the game made me feel like it all hinged on my choices.
Yeah.
So, you know, Shepard may have been the vessel for the experience, but, I mean, make no mistake about it. Like, the game is mine, and it's yours, and it's everybody else who ever played it. And I think that's what made it so great and memorable. And what I love about video games today is that, you know, if you build a game around a rich narrative, it's really such a rewarding experience for the player. And I think it's something that it's continuing to evolve because you have, you know, the companies that do it really well are putting out some amazing titles. Like off the top of my head, forgive me, I ramble. Off the top of my head, I'm thinking of stuff like The Last of Us, BioShock, Heavy Rain, The Wolf Among Us.
Yeah.
You know what? Telltale in general, right? I mean, those guys and girls are incredible freaking storytellers.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, these are all games that are going to withstand the test of time because they've created memorable player experiences. And on a personal note, like, I sincerely hope that that's the direction more games are headed in the future, but I totally get that that's not everyone's cup of tea, so I'm just selfishly saying that, you know, hey, the more the merrier.
Yeah. Okay, so I have to ask, FemShep or BroShep?
I have way more FemShep saves on my system than BroShep. But I love Mark Meer. He is such an awesome dude.
I had to ask.
We won't hold it up for life.
May I jump in here?
Sure.
Yeah. So quick. So anyway, Dave, your words just now and the passion in those words just totally moved me. Like I have a tear. that was just so well said and wonderful. And I agree that Mass Effect was the game that made me feel like it was my game, and you know that they were my teammates and they were also my friends. And I've never felt that way before. I mean, I felt it with Star Wars, the old Star Wars. I felt like Han and Chewie were my friends. And I felt it with, what's the other thing? I'm drawing a blank. I can't remember. I felt it with something else, too, but I felt it, with Firefly. That's what I meant. Firefly and Star Wars and Mass Effect, those three things, I was like, I am here, this is part of my journey. Holy shit, these are my friends. Like, this is like, I've never felt that way about, you know, it's like, it's rare to come across something like that, and that's why I love Mass Effect so much, so... Yeah. Well done. Well said. Kudos.
<Thank you>. That's not a question.
No, I'm sorry. It was just me gushing. I just had to. It just moved me, and I felt like I had to say something. I do have a few questions, though, but they kind of, well, they're not really clear segues, but whatever. We'll make it work. So I have... I'm going to start with what does a community manager do? If you could describe what it is you do there.
Sure. I will try my best to ramble as minimal as possible.
That's okay.
Well, the role of community manager varies a bit by each company, I think, because you have some companies where the community manager is sort of the face of the brand. So you see them in all the videos, they're at all the events, and usually it's, you know, their name signed at the end of every blog. At EA, you know, the role is actually a little bit different because rather than the face of the brand, a community manager is the voice of the brand. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you're communicating to millions of players, so how you say the message is just as important as what you're saying. A community manager, it kind of, you know, their responsibility is to define what that voice sounds like and kind of set the precedent for the experience that players have, and honestly, what they should expect when they come and engage with the brand. So, just as an example, like if you follow Dragon Age on Facebook or Twitter, or if you read the blogs on DragonAge.com, if you come away feeling both entertained and informed, then I've done my job. And I think the other thing is, it's not just about talking; it's more importantly about listening. That one-way communication just doesn't cut it in 2015, right? And even if we can't respond to every question or comment, I mean, we are absolutely always listening. I know that sounds like such a corporate line, but I can assure you, because you know, I'm responsible for so much of that communication, that we are absolutely listening at all times.
Cool.
And it's important because people have actually, and I don't know if this is always a good thing. Case in point is the whole madness that you came in on when you started working for BioWare. Is that sometimes I wonder how much listening is too much. like I said, I love the whole Mass Effect series, but I think I have a different understanding of games than some other folks in the games community do. Mm-hmm. So when I got the ending that I got, I was perfectly happy with that ending because that was the ending, that was the ending that was given to me, right? And I think that was interesting. And I didn't feel that I was entitled to something else. And I wonder, you know, how much listening is too much, but
I think it's true that there's definitely a balance because I think it's difficult at like a public level sometimes where you're trying to get your opinion across, like there's something that you just want people to know, and it's not, you know, video games aren't as reactive as other things, right? Mm-hmm. Where if there's something that needs to be done in game, that takes months of coding, you know, teams working together to make it happen. You know, it's not as simple as like, you know, oh, you know, somebody wants like a better weapon for this character, and we hear that, and we're like, you know what? We want that character to have a better weapon, so we're going to do that. But it takes time, and I think a really good example of that is, you know, Dragon Age Inquisition. You know, we absolutely were going through and kind of surveying all the feedback that was coming in, like all the things that people wanted. And like one of the ones in particular was party storage, right? Like it's something that has always been in Dragon Age that you don't want to, you know, lug around a bunch of extra equipment. But there wasn't one in Dragon Age Inquisition, and our fans definitely noticed. And that was something where, you know, it was cool because the feedback would come in, and then the team just gets together and says, like, you know what, logistically, like, what's it going to take to put storage in Skyhold? You know, we can add it in a patch, and then boom, you know, it came out this week, actually. So that's the kind of thing that makes me feel good about how communication is working in today's, you know, day and age of, you know, studios and community, because those kind of things, they do matter to us. Like, we want to make sure that players are getting the experience that they want, and, you know, we're whatever is within our power, you know, we're happy to explore.
Yeah. Okay, Ash, go ahead. Do you want to ask your other questions?
Yeah, I want to actually ask you more questions about reading stuff. So, I am curious about what you like to read, and I mean, we already kind of went over this, but I was going to ask if you had a favorite genre or a favorite book, anything like that.
Well, you know, it's funny, and you want to talk about, like, dark secrets. I actually wasn't even much of a reader, like, most of my life, and...
Wow,
shame.
I know, right? And it was something where, and maybe this is a good chance for me to blame video games, but it wasn't until I got a little bit older and I started realizing that there's so many other types of like entertainment that you can engage with to get like a rich story, right? And mm-hmm. obviously reading, right, makes a hell of a lot of sense. And when I got to a point where I wanted to start writing books and publishing books, you know, I met a lot of just crazy talented independent authors, and from that, I mean, I count some of them among my overall favorites. And you know, I will read pretty much any genre as long as the story and the emotional connection is there. Like I love a good hook, you know, something that just keeps my imagination fully immersed. And I'm gonna plug some independent authors, because you've got writers out there right now like Bernard Schaefer, William Bitka, Simon Cox, Courtney Cantrell, and then my good friend Tony Healy that I mentioned at the beginning. I mean, these are all top-notch writers that are not well known by any stretch of the imagination. But mm-hmm. if you were to look them up and like investigate a little bit, read some of their work, I mean, I think you'd be just as impressed as I am. Mm-hmm. They're just so talented, and I'm so grateful that I've been able to meet such, you know, fantastic writers. They're all very down to earth. Like, we can have conversations about things and help each other out. It's not cutthroat, you know, like I thought it would be when I got started. But you know, the community of writers, they really band together and just make sure we're all, you know, we're all in it for the same thing. Right? We all just want to have fun, tell our stories.
What has been the most? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
What has been the most rewarding thing about writing to you?
Oh, man.
Sorry, loaded question. I just have to ask.
This is going to sound like the most canned answer, and I'm so sorry in advance, but I honestly think the first time I started getting reviews back from people I didn't know, because it was one thing to like put out books, and you know, like if you've got a group of like close-knit friends and family that will read it, and they'll all say great things, right? And you expect right. that because they're your close friends and family. But when people I didn't know started either kind of seeking me out on social media or writing reviews on Amazon, like that's when it all felt real. Like I'm actually able to entertain, and it may not be, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, but that's okay. If I entertain one person with something that I've written, like I could die a happy person, and like I think that's really been for me just the most rewarding thing is knowing that someone out there that I'm not related to was entertained by my work.
Well, I mean, isn't that why we do it? Is so that we can reach someone, you know, and getting confirmation that that's happening. That is you're right. I think it's the ultimate payoff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting because you talk about reading writers or authors who aren't well known, and I know that I have to say this. One of my guilty pleasures in terms of books are mysteries. Mm-hmm. If there's a mystery there, I'm down for it. And one of the things that really turns me off about mysteries is when there is here's the lesbian in me, but heterosexual romance elements. So I prefer to have no romance whatsoever for a reason, because heterosexual romance and a lot of mystery turns into this very patriarchal and misogynistic thing, because you get the very kind of Sam Spade, I'm a man. Kind of, you know what I mean, right?
That has to be
carried out and carried into the romance as well. So I find that reading a lot of independent folks, you get people who are more adventurous with the kinds of things that they write. And they don't feel the need to kind of conform to what they've written before.
Yes, they write the same thing over and over again.
So yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying when you start talking about, you know, reading independent folks or folks that are new, like first novels even, because you can get some really good, really new stuff that doesn't feel like everything else that's been published already. So that there is something new under the sun.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah, that's been my favorite thing about the whole ebook. Mm-hmm. All the new people.
Yeah, it has been really nice in that it's just sometimes it's so hard. You know, I mean, digging through the bookstore, ebooks, anything is kind of like going into the app store. You're looking for a specific thing.
Yeah.
But damn, you got to wade through a lot of stuff to find it. Mm-hmm. But
when you do, it's so awesome.
It is an awesome feeling, but sometimes it's very needle in the haystack, kind of like, wow. Especially if, like me, you're a hater and you have really specific taste.
Yeah.
Because none of us here are haters.
No.
Not at all.
Just you.
Wendy, we need to start a club because everybody else, I think, hates us for being haters.
Did you see me making faces when he was talking about Telltale?
I know, but we're going to have to agree to disagree on that one, because I love Telltale. I accept her flaws, let's just say that.
I love it despite the flaws, how's that?
You know, like Ready Player One? Well, can we circle back around to this idea of the community manager and how people get into the industry? Because I would really just like to, one of the things I think we often like to do when we have someone like you, Dave, hold an illustrious position, is to kind of see how we can pay that forward when we deal with students, when we're thinking about ourselves, when we're thinking about careers. Like, what can people do to prepare, considering that there's so many crazy paths to get into it? What's something that people can do to prepare to get into the industry?
Sure. Wow, let's see here. Well, I mean, the role...
Big questions.
Yeah, no, but very good questions. I mean, the role of community manager is expanding so much these days. And I think the most important thing to know is that you really need to develop a skill set that's as well-rounded as possible. Because some people make the assumption that a community manager just sort of hangs out in the forums or like on social media talking to fans. But I mean, that's not even close to the reality. It's a portion of the job, sure, but you know, being a community manager is more like air traffic control. And I say that because you have so many teams within the organization that have messages that need to get out, and you're kind of like you've got the keys to the channels. So that not only do you have so many people that need to get messages out, but that information can change at a moment's notice. So, notice. Wow, I can speak well. I haven't even been drinking.
It's great.
Indeed. But a community manager needs to be agile and well-organized for sure. You also have to be prepared to multitask, because when there's like a big announcement coming down the pipe, it's a bit of a juggling act to make sure that everything goes off without a hitch. You've got to execute as flawlessly as possible. What else can I tell you? A community manager, you need first-class communication skills. Like, you want to be able to do that internally and externally. You're going to work with a lot of people, and personalities sometimes clash, but you really have to remain professional at all times, even when it's hard. And I think this is especially true when you're representing the brand externally, like I'm doing now. Sometimes people out there, they just want to be jerks, right? And they'll send you some pretty nasty, mean-spirited messages from time to time. And, you know, it's tempting to want to react with anger, because, I mean, we're only human, right? But you just have to do your best. You know, you've got to just put on your thick skin and let it go. And I know that's hard, because I've heard plenty of stories around the industry about, you know, other community managers that have kind of retaliated and then they lost their jobs.
Yeah.
I'm
just going to say that struggle is probably real, because gamers, man, fucking passionate, doesn't need to fuck you.
Get off it. It's true, too, because, it's like in your mind, you're like, God, it would feel so good just to say what I really think right now. But, it really is just understanding that, like, at the end of the day, I don't believe everyone is inherently evil. I think, to your point, right, people are extremely passionate, and sometimes understanding how to vocalize that passion is not in their skill set. So, you know, like, I try my best to just put myself in their shoes and, you know, look the other way if I can. You know, or worst case scenario, I'm going to go boot up some Mass Effect, kill some Reapers, and then I'm as good as new.
Well said, man.
Well, we have a question from Sarah, who's at GDC right now. But she's a community manager at Kabam, and she had a specific question. Ashley, you threw this one up there. Do you want to go ahead and ask this one or someone?
Yeah, that's fine. So she wanted to know what you think makes BioWare, the BioWare community, stand out or unique among the game communities.
If I'm being completely honest, it's our fans. Because I've worked on other games for other companies in this industry, and I can tell you that there is nothing like working with the BioWare community. And I mean that sincerely. Like, you have people that connect with these games in a way that really makes community feel more like family. I know that sounds cheesy, but it's like if you look at, you know, other games that maybe don't have that, like, it doesn't unite people, right? I love that BioWare games unite people in discussion, and not everybody has the same opinion, and that's totally cool, but I love that there's discussion. And to me, that's what makes such a fun experience. Like, if you want to be part of a community, you want to be part of something where, you know, people are engaged with each other. I've been to so many different events, right? Like, you know, the E3s and Comic-Cons and all that, and I've had a chance to meet so many people in person, you know, people that beforehand maybe I only knew as a Twitter handle. And it's now to a point where, you know, now these are like people, heck, Ashley, you're probably the perfect example of that, because I met you at PAX East. And here we are today, you know, she's beta reading manuscripts. It's such a cool thing, right? Like, I've never had that experience on any other company, any other title I've ever worked on. And I really think, like, that's a testament to just how awesome our community is.
He met me when I was dressed as Catwoman.
Wow, and you liked her anyway?
Yeah, you think I was crazy. Oh.
He loved you in spite of yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, we do too, Ashley. Feeling the love.
So do we... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. All right, I was just going to say, Dave, is there anything about your job that we didn't touch on that you'd just like to say?
Well, let's see.
You're allowed to say, and it was like super secret and shit.
Well, I mean, I think that the other aspect of my job that I think is so cool is that, you know, even though in title, right, I'm community manager, but, you know, behind the scenes, I have so many touch points throughout the organization, and I love that. Like, it's not just, you know, showing up for work, writing some Facebook posts, and then calling it a day. Like, there are so many other groups that I get to work with. And I think, like, that's the part that keeps it so refreshing and challenging, because there's, you know, there might be a day where I need to work with marketing on, you know, writing, like, metadata for videos, right? And it sounds so boring when you say it out loud, but that collaboration is so much fun, because you get to see how a trailer comes to life, right, from the very first sketches, which are always horrible and laughable, to the final video where, you know, all the final cinematics are put in, all the VO is in, and it's really cool getting to see something brought to life. And, you know, working with another team on just making sure that the message is delivered, you know, in the right voice, that we're communicating the right information, that it's going out on the right channels. I mean, like, that could be one day, and then the next day, you know, maybe people from, you know, business development need some feedback on potential products that we're looking to make, you know, like new hoodies or T-shirts or books, whatever that might be. And I love that I have a seat at the table, you know, at so many other aspects of the job. And I really am so happy that that's the way this company works, because, like I said, I've worked for other companies where it isn't like that. I mean, I really feel that this company goes out of its way to make me feel like part of the team and a significant part of the team. So, I can't say enough great things about, you know, the whole organization.
See, I like to hear that. I like to hear that companies that I like treat their employees well and, like, do a good job of building community. Then I don't feel guilty. Yeah. Like, giving them my money.
All the money.
Giving them all my monies. I don't feel bad about that at that point. Awesome. Does anyone else have questions for Dave before we turn it around and say, well, he added anything that he wanted to add? We can say, you can ask us any questions you want to ask about our lowly lives as academics. That's not fun. I'm kidding.
We're not that exciting.
We are boring. It's a joke.
Screw that.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, one day somebody will think what we do is interesting. No, they won't.
Dave?
No pressure. Validate us.
I have one last question. Dave, right. Was it white and gold or blue and black?
Oh, God.
You would not believe the debate that sparked within our team.
Okay, and, I live in the world, so yes, I would. Yes.
I actually have serious been about that shit.
What happened was a couple people on the team bitching that everybody was talking about it, right? Like, it was like, oh my God, I'm so sick of hearing about this. I'm so tired. And then it turned into like, hey, you know what? Don't we have a picture of a mage in a white and gold outfit? And then it was like, oh God, no. And then we're like, hey, and that Templar, if we put just a little tint on that, that looks blue and black. And then that became our morning one day, just trying to have some fun and get in on the whole dress debacle. And then you think that would be the end of it, except that somebody had to open their mouth on the team and say, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's white and gold anyway. And then someone else is like, excuse me?
Oh.
And then I think it was about a half-hour fight over what color that dress was. Yeah. So that was good use of time.
You had skirted it, but... The dress comes back every time.
We thought so. Yeah.
Some crazy shit.
That was actually a really fun day, though, because I don't know if you guys were following our Twitter account that day that we were having some fun with it, but that same day, we actually split our team into two, and we had, like, one group of people, like, really passionate about the dress idea, kind of working on that, and then I was on, like, the other side working on the escape llamas and, like,
the llamas, yeah.
capturing video of, you know, from the game.
The llamas, man.
I was a hell of a day
for the internet.
Exactly, right? I was like, there's no reason why we can't cap some Hala running around, you know, the Exalted Plains and have some fun with it. And I imagine, like, the people following us that day were just like, what in the hell are they getting paid to do over there?
Either the best job in the world or possibly the worst.
So here's the real question.
Oh, shit.
Paragon or Renegade?
Ooh, good question. Ooh. Very good question.
Because I am a completionist at heart, I have to do both, and I have to go 100% both ways so that I can see everything.
Okay, so if you had to choose one, which path would you choose?
Right.
Yeah, you can't give a cheater answer.
That's fair.
I love both my kids equally. Okay.
You know, The funny thing is, like, even though playing as a renegade makes me feel like an awful human being, I am always, like, laughing maniacally, so I'm like, nobody can see me be this much of a bastard, yeah. So I'm just going to enjoy it.
Yep. And the real Dave comes out.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
That's okay, Dave.
I had a playthrough where I tried so hard to be a renegade. This is my gaming confession, right? Because I'm kind of an asshole. I couldn't do it.
Not much of a convention. Oh,
are you kidding me?
That's surprising.
I played the way I would have played if I were the real Shepherd, because that was the way what I decided I was going to do.
That was how my Renegade playthrough ended up, because I had played a Paragon, and then I went back as a Renegade, and I was like, I can't, so I just got to be me. So
I ended up being a Paragon again. And it was like 100% Renegade.
Oh, shit!
So apparently I'm an asshole in real life.
We can't be friends anymore.
Apparently.
I would say, though, to be fair, there are characters that mean so much to me when I play that even if I try to play 100% Renegade, there's absolutely no way I can be a jerk to those characters. And so it makes it tough, because I'm like, oh, I just got Paragon points, damn it.
Well, you know, it's like the thing, what I discovered is that once you go so far Renegade, it doesn't even give you, like, the real Paragon options anymore. It's like, no, really, you wouldn't do that. I'm not even going to offer that to you anymore. Because apparently no matter what I do, you're going to shoot people. So let's just give you that option.
Just cut to the chase.
Man, I just couldn't do it. So kudos to you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Dave. It was a blast. For taking time to answer our questions and participate in our madness, which is true madness. and we're just you can hang around if you like, because we're gonna wrap up and do our last quick things, which are Charlotte can tell us what our deals for broke ass gamers are if she's still awake.
I am totally awake. It only happened one time.
And I will never let
time will live in infinity.
Oh my gosh, yes. Okay, yeah. Well, I have the boring, I'm not boring, but typical, I guess is a better word, Humble Bundle Weekly is monochromatic, which I think is super cool. It's missing the big monochromatic one, but that's okay.
Limbo, of course, yes, we know.
Yeah, no Limbo. But it does have Never Ending Nightmares, which I think Ashley played, right?
Yep, I did.
And The Bridge is another one that's in there.
Yeah, The Bridge looks really cool to me. The Bridge looks cool. It has Dominique Papelmuse, which we had her on the show one time.
Mm-hmm.
And, and it's I don't know, it looks pretty cool to me if you're into that. You know, platformer kind of thing. I mean, mm-hmm. Dominique Papelmuse isn't, and I don't think Never Ending Nightmares is, but the bridge and closer both look like platformers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then also, looks like Amazon is having a sale on some older Rockstar games. So they have Max Payne for $2. This is for PC. Oh, wow. Max Payne 2 for $2. Midnight Club 2 for $2. Manhunt for $2.
I think some of those are worth about $2.
Well, I don't know.
Bully Scholarship.
Well, it was surprising I couldn't be a renegade. I'm sorry, go ahead.
L.A. Noire for $6. So those are not all bad games, regardless of the age, I think.
And I saw that you're having a Steam OS game sale, so all the games that are being released, there's like 20 games that are being released on Steam OS this week. They're all marked down like pretty significantly. So check those out.
Somebody would send me a Steam box.
Mm-hmm. And can I just say how much I love L.A. Noire? I'm just going to throw that out there.
I liked it too. $6 is totally worth it.
$6 is totally worth it.
$6, man. Like, wow.
Mm-hmm. That's a good weekend of gaming right there for $6. If you can ignore the seductively posed naked women, I mean dead women, yeah.
If you've played a game in your life, you've probably seen some seductively posed naked women.
Yeah, that's
Hitman, yeah, the whole nine. Yeah. True fact. You're right.
Oh, look, set dressing, women's bodies.
Dead women.
Yeah. So ain't no thing.
All right, I didn't mean to go there. Take it to the dark place. Didn't mean to take it to the dark place.
Derail.
Mm-hmm. Any other good deals?
Oh, I haven't seen this. Though.
I have to admit this because I broke down and did something I said I wasn't going to do. Because, you know, we have Skylanders and we have Disney Infinity figures and we have,
yeah,
like,
I was fixing to go there. That was my question.
All these stupid figures in my house, including, yeah, like 4 or 5 Infinity figures that we bought, mm-hmm, in the 30 seconds before my kid decided she was never going to play Disney Infinity again. So they never even got opened. But we were out shopping and she saw the Princess Peach amiibo. And yeah, she was entitled to a book chart reward. So we got the damn damn amiibo. And then I was like, well, you know, Walmart is supposed to have the special gold Mario amiibo. Like, if I'm buying all these amiibos, looks like I'm going to have to buy Mario Party 10. So I'm gonna be sucked in all over again. I'm gonna admit
That's what I was gonna say. Is it seems like the deal boards are like all like obsessed with these amiibos. Like, well, not even like for deals, just like where you can find them.
Yeah. Because Mario Party.
And I don't really understand what I'm supposed to do with it. I know that.
It's like a Pokemon,
kind of. I know the new 3DS is supposed to have like some capability to do something with them.
Yeah, you can do the same thing you can with the Wii U. Is use it, put the amiibo on there, and use it like a Infinity or a Skylander figure, and it saves like power ups and crazy stuff on the actual amiibo.
So this is not something I would be interested in, right?
Well, you bought the new 3DS, so apparently you have to buy the amiibo too.
I don't think
it's
that's
a rule.
I don't think that doesn't sound like,
you know,
that
it's
doesn't
funny.
Sound like a broke ass
say,
game reveal.
Yeah, I started to say like the last thing I would be interested in is some extra peripherals, but then I was the one who was all like, "Oh my god, new Rock Band!" Earlier.
heck yeah!
Uh-huh.
More junk around the house.
More junk around the house. More things to throw money at.
I was going to ask, Dave, did you get pulled into any of the Skylanders or the Disney Infinity?
No, it's one of those things where I had some friends, you know, with kids that were really into it, and they kept telling me, like, oh, it's not the kids game you think it is. Like, it's actually so good, and by then I'd already missed the boat. So I'm like, well, I'll catch it one of these days. So I have, like, this list of, I think we all probably have, like, our stack of shame, right? Like, all the games that we've purchased because we were going to play them,
yeah,
and they are still in cellophane, like, years later. Yeah, Skylanders wouldn't fit in that pile, so. Maybe one of these days.
I just carefully walked my son past every Skylanders display ever, and I was like, maybe eventually, by which I mean never.
Ooh, now I have to make sure that he plays those when he comes to my house.
God, I hate you.
Well, you know, and that's interesting for because blah, and I totally lost it that quickly. Have a fourth glass. It's probably finished by now. That's the problem.
Have another drink there, Sam.
I know. Every other Thursday is hell on my liver, I swear.
I just keep swigging my espresso.
Uh-huh. Okay, I give up. I don't know what I was going to say at this point. But, yeah. It's just no surprise because I'm horrible. I have poor impulse control, so I buy everything.
Yeah, she does.
That comes across. It's like, oh, look, I need this.
It's for research.
Yeah. Shiny. Yeah.
That's the good part about doing games research is you can justify that kind of crazy stuff.
That's true.
All right.
I'm ready for that.
Charlotte, is that it for Ideals for Broke-Ass Gamers this week, darling?
That's all I got.
Okay, so we'll do a quick rundown and say thanks for joining us for the 96th episode of the Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast. Yay, we're almost to 100. We got to do something special. We keep saying this. We're going to get to 100 and be like, well, I guess we're not doing anything. So, but we have to plan to do something special for 100. We've only got 2 months. So, we've got 2 months to plan. But anyway, so feel free to send us email, voicemail, video mail, whatever kind of mail you want. You can send it to us at our email address, which is nymgamer@gmail.com, or you can use the lovely flyouts both on our webpage and on our Facebook page to leave us voicemail. We'll be happy to answer in kind. And you can always like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at NYMGamer. And if Twitter or Facebook and all those other wonderful things are not your thing, you can find the Not Your Mama's Gamer Tumblr at nymgamer.tumblr.com. And if you're ever bored, it seems to be late at night, and you want something interesting on your Twitch channel, you can check out the NYM Gamer Twitch stream, which we seem to be streaming a couple times a week now, and we'll get a more regular schedule going once people are like, yay, look how fun this is. hint, hint. see how that works.
Don't hint. I've been streaming, but
yes,
on my own.
Yes, you have, darling. I know.
It's not going to happen.
It's NYMGamer_Alicia. And I apparently am funny when
not using the regular anymore. And not using the regular channel. We'll talk about that later. Anyway. So that being said, until next time, once again, thank you for joining us for episode 96. And until then, stay warm, stay dry, stay safe, and as always, my friends, game on.
Game on.
Game on.
Game on. Game on.